We must take action to make sure that UK businesses are not part of the supply chains that lead to the gates of the internment camps in Xinjiang.
China boosts assault on human rights. It's Monday, January 18th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, a virtual meeting with Taiwan, U.S. political divisions, increased inauguration security, vaccine hesitancy, new tech on display. It's all on today's VOA Asia. British lawmakers from the ruling Conservative Party's Human Rights Commission are saying the Chinese Communist Party has intensified an assault on all human rights throughout China, and that those interacting with the regime should do so in the knowledge that they are interacting with a criminal state. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
From the incarceration of millions of ethnic Uyghurs in Xinjiang province to the brutal crackdown on protests and democracy in Hong Kong, the report authors say there has been a massive deterioration in the human rights situation in China the past 5 years.
In particular, endemic slave labor, the development of surveillance technologies to create essentially an Orwellian surveillance state, the use of forced televised confessions, the implementation of new laws that allow within the so-called legal system for arbitrary detentions and disappearances, and the continued widespread use of torture and forced organ harvesting.
Among those contributing to the report was Rahima Mahmood, an ethnic Uyghur from Xinjiang province. After witnessing the massacre of dozens of protesters in 1997, she fled to Britain. She now performs music concerts to highlight Uyghur culture. Mahmood told VOA people in Xinjiang are living under constant terror, and she has not been able to speak to her family in 4 years.
A knock on the door brings fright to anyone, because you just think that, are they came to me? Are they here to take me away? I don't know how to describe my feeling, each time when I read these articles, the details of what is happening to the people, mass rape, sterilization, torning apart families.
Despite mounting evidence, China again this week denied the existence of Uyghur prison camps and dismissed allegations of forced sterilizations of Uyghur women.
What contraceptive measures they take are all decided by individuals at their own will, and no organization or individual can interfere. There is no compulsory sterilization.
The British Conservative Party report comes as an increasing number of lawmakers demand a reset in relations with China. It's just 5 years since then British Prime Minister David Cameron hailed a golden era of relations with Beijing. But the relationship has since rapidly soured. Following the United States' recent ban on cotton and tomato imports from Xinjiang over concerns of slave labor, British Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab this week announced new restrictions.
We must take action to make sure that UK businesses are not part of the supply chains that lead to the gates of the internment camps in Xinjiang.
Mahmood wants Raab to go further and declare the persecution of the Uyghurs as genocide.
He has often remained saying that the genocide, it has to be decided in court, not by politicians. But then we know very clearly we cannot pursue UN route because China has a veto power.
Beijing denies committing gross human rights abuses and has repeatedly called on Western countries to stop interfering in what it calls internal affairs. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. China using cognitive warfare against Taiwan, according to observers. India begins COVID-19 inoculation campaign. gunmen assassinate two female Afghan judges in Kabul. Interference forces BBC to stop airing show on Pakistani TV. Nepali climbers make historic winter ascent of Pakistan's K2. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Kelly Craft, met virtually with Taiwan's President Tsai Ing-wen late Wednesday after her trip was canceled. Ties between the United States and Taiwan have been growing under the Trump administration, with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo lifting restrictions on contacts between the two democracies. VOA State Department correspondent Nike Ching has more on what comes next for the incoming administration.
U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Kelly Craft's video conference with Taiwan's President Tsai Ing-wen is seen as a move to show U.S. support for the self-ruled democracy, while seeking closer ties in health and technology.
I would also like to take this opportunity to thank thank you for the staunch support for Taiwan's international participation and for your efforts in deepening the Taiwan-U.S. relationship. And thank you for always speaking up for Taiwan at the most important time.
China is vowing to punish the U.S. for seeking closer ties to Taiwan, as Beijing has long seen Taiwan as part of China.
China will continue to carry out all necessary measures to resolutely safeguard its own sovereign, territorial, and security interests. Certain U.S. politicians will pay a heavy price for their wrong words and deeds.
For years, most senior American officials were banned from traveling to Taiwan to avoid upsetting Beijing. The State Department recently lifted the self-imposed restrictions. Experts say that gives the incoming administration of President-elect Joe Biden safer options.
I think the Biden administration was going to do its own review regardless, but with this decision now in hand, the Biden administration can look at new and novel ways of interacting with Taiwan to include de facto Taiwan ambassador to the United States meeting with U.S. officials in Washington in a very public way, to include senior level cabinet official level meetings.
The relations between the U.S. and Taiwan have been governed by the Taiwan Relations Act, under which the U.S. provides defense equipment to Taiwan. Other analysts say Washington should continue to bolster Taipei's defenses to maintain stability across the Taiwan Strait amid China's intensifying military moves in the region.
One of the things the Biden administration could do is continue to update our policy when it comes to training. You know, it's one thing to sell Taiwan arms, but it's just as important to make sure that the U.S.-Taiwan military relationship is strong and that from a training perspective, you know, we're ensuring the best we can across strait stabilities.
Taiwan and China have been separately ruled since the end of a civil war in 1949, with Beijing continuing to claim sovereignty over Taipei, a self-ruled democracy. The U.S. says its long-held One China policy is distinct from Beijing's One China principle, and that it takes no position on China's sovereignty over Taiwan. Nike Ching, VOA News at the State Department.
This news from VOA Asia. Several pro-democracy activists in Thailand were arrested as protests unexpectedly returned to Bangkok streets, defying an emergency law imposed during a fresh COVID-19 outbreak to rally against a royal defamation law being wielded against their movement. You'll find this and more on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. A new CBS YouGov poll says 21% of Republicans approve of the bloody siege on the U.S. Congress by supporters of President Donald Trump. Many more believe the November election was rigged. As the United States heads into a turbulent transition of power, Patsy Whitaker-Suara has the story on this divided and angry nation.
It's a scene that horrified Americans, with multiple polls showing the vast majority of the country rebuking the supporters of President Donald Trump, who forced their way into the U.S. Capitol on January 6.
When I woke up this morning and saw on CNN that this was the darkest day in American history, I was sick to my stomach.
But a CBS YouGov poll this week shows 21% of Republicans, that's millions of Americans, said they approved of the perpetrators of the siege. And according to the latest PBS NewsHour Marist poll, 35% of Americans say they don't trust the November election results, even though there is no evidence of widespread fraud.
It's the big lie. If you say it over and over and over enough, then people start to take it as true. And so it's been the president and his enablers in Congress.
Up to 15,000 National Guard troops have been deployed to Washington to protect President-elect Joe Biden's inauguration on January 20th, amid fears of new violence. Meanwhile, this week, the House of Representatives impeached Trump for inciting insurrection, the second impeachment of his term.
The ayes are 232. The nays are 197.
As the president approaches the end of his term, the country is divided. While many scholars draw parallels to the period of the nation's founding and the Civil War, there is one important difference.
Both of those time periods, who counted as a citizen was almost exclusively just a white man, right? So we think about who the American people are and how that's changed over time. It's also true that history gives us a guide to think about the things that will need to be put in place to make this moment transformative. Clearly a powerful president, a powerful in the sense of understanding the symbolism in the office and that it stands for all the American people, is one of the necessary ingredients in this mix.
While Biden has continued with the message of unity that he campaigned on, he will face steep challenges to heal an angry, divided nation.
It's a very similar moment to post-Civil War. We had major struggles and battles around what is the nature of this country, and then now we're going to set about trying to push an agenda around building a multiracial democracy like we did with Reconstruction, or are we going to continue to paper over these differences and just try to excuse without coming to terms with the fact that there's profound inequality and injustice in this country?
As the country deals with division, inauguration preparations are underway, with Biden set to take his oath of office on January 20th. Patsy Whitaker-Suara, VOA News.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
Happening now in Asia, Indonesian rescue teams have pulled more bodies from the rubble of residential and commercial buildings toppled by a strong earthquake last week, killing at least 78 people. More than 800 people have been injured, thousands left homeless. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. At least 15,000 armed National Guard troops will provide support for U.S. Capitol security before and during the inauguration of President-elect Joe Biden January 20th. Daria Digits has more on the National Guard and its role.
From natural catastrophes to protests and military operations, the National Guard, the U.S. Military Reserve Force, is mobilized in an array of situations domestically and abroad. The men and women of the reserve hold civilian jobs, some working as doctors, engineers, office workers, and students. But when there is an emergency, National Guard troops can be called to serve both community and country at a moment's notice. It is an idea as old as the U.S. Constitution.
Many of the drafters of the Constitution wanted to not even create a standing army at all and just rely on what were sort of called citizen soldiers, the farmers who would, when the call went up, would leave their farms, take a musket and ride to the rescue.
Today, National Guard candidates must be at least 17 years old and not older than 35. They are required to train at least one weekend a month and take a 2-week prep course once a year.
It offers them a chance to serve the nation without joining the military full time. And so, you know, it probably is a little bit less popular as an option after the deployments in Iraq and Afghanistan. But still, there are a great number of people who decide that they want to serve the nation and still be at home having their regular jobs.
The U.S. has 54 National Guard units, one in each state, plus the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, Guam, and the Virgin Islands. Both state governors and the U.S. president can mobilize them at any time. Since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, they have been helping at hospitals and testing facilities.
It's part of my job. It's something I love doing. I joined the military for a reason. I joined to help back and give back to my community and to give back to my country.
Though the National Guard has military training, they rarely carry arms for domestic operations.
Especially after the events in early 1970, when armed guard troops under the control of the Ohio state governor fired on people at a protest, an anti-war protest during the Vietnam War at Kent State University, there has been a profound reluctance on the part of guard leaders and the Department of Defense to have the U.S. National Guard units carry weapons.
On January 6th, National Guard troops deployed to Washington, D.C. after pro-Trump rioters attacked the U.S. Capitol. Since then, the Pentagon has announced at least 15,000 armed National Guard troops will provide security support around the U.S. Capitol area in the days leading up to the January 20 inauguration of President-elect Joe Biden. Daria D. Goods, VOA News, Washington.
This news from VOA Asia. China's People's Liberation Army has expanded a Navy base on the South China Sea, giving its fleet more clout in a strategic waterway disputed by five other countries and watched closely by Washington. Over at least the past year, China's Navy expanded Yulin Naval Base on the island province of Hainan. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, 2 years ago, in January 2019, the World Health Organization said vaccine hesitancy was among the top 10 threats to global health. That was before COVID-19 spread around the globe. VOA's Carol Pearson tells us how doctors are working to overcome that hesitancy.
Even though scientists race to find a vaccine, persuading people to take it could be a problem. Two recent surveys, one from the Pew Research Center and the other from Gallup, put the number of Americans not wanting to get the vaccine between 37% and 40%. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the leading infectious disease expert in the U.S., estimates that herd immunity could require as much as 85% vaccine coverage. In Philadelphia, about half of the emergency technicians and fire department medics have chosen not to get the vaccine.
We hope that over time, as more people are vaccinated and we get more education out there, that more of our members will receive the vaccine, be willing to receive the vaccine.
African Americans have one of the highest rates of COVID infection and death in the U.S., according to the CDC. Yet surveys show only 4 out of 10 Black Americans said they would be vaccinated, compared with 8 out of 10 Asian Americans and 6 in 10 white and Hispanic Americans.
Minorities are leery about it, and we have a right to be leery about it.
Public health experts are calling for targeted information campaigns.
We need to do better at rectifying this problem so that people do participate.
Doctors who belong to the American Board of Internal Medicine are posting photos and videos of themselves getting the COVID vaccine. It's part of a campaign by the American Board of Internal Medicine to convince people that it's safe.
We're hoping that doctors in this country have enough webs of relationships with their families, with their patients, with their communities, that if they step up and lead and show people that they are not only willing to do this, but proud of it and encouraging other people to do it, we hope that will be part of the very broad campaign that we all need to get to a place where most of us have had the vaccine.
Given the soaring U.S. infection rate and the enormous death toll, the need is urgent. In California, Disneyland is hosting a mass vaccination site. In Arizona, the National Guard has stepped in to help at vaccination sites. The pandemic will end only when the vaccine in a bottle gets into people's arms. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
More than 150,000 people from 154 countries are at the U.S. Consumer Electronics Show. This time, all online this week. Michelle Quinn logs in.
A transparent TV screen, phones that roll, faucets you talk to, flying taxis. The Consumer Electronics Show, normally in Las Vegas, is this week entirely online due to the pandemic. Still, they come. About 170,000 people from around the world are attending virtually to see nearly 2,000 companies show off what's new. A big focus, consumer technology's response to the pandemic.
We're seeing a lot even with like touchless technologies, you know, things that are sensor driven because again, people right now don't necessarily want to be touching things.
Perhaps because the event is online, nearly half of the attendees this year are from outside the U.S., more than a typical year.
It's just been so much fun to see people saying, hi from Sri Lanka, or hi from Peru, or hi from, you know, places that we just wouldn't think that people would be tuning in from.
For exhibitors, the online venue is bittersweet. No one can touch and feel their products. It's harder to meet people.
To understand this, you need to hold it. And this is like, for us, it's a little bit sad, but I don't think this is a big problem because maybe in some perspective, it's even better.
It's an opportunity to meet each other. It's awkward, but you know, it's the best we can do on this situation.
I actually feel it might be even better because it seems to me, you know, the number of exhibitors now is much less than, you know, the previous time. So we get more attention.
Organizers say all digital CES can't replicate everything positive about being in person, but they are putting on a show. A feat given the pandemic.
What people look forward to now, as we see, especially after this year, is that this need to come together and showcase how technology can change things and advance things and, you know, really help solve things for people.
Technology, bringing people together while giving a glimpse into the future. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
That's our program for today. We thank you for joining us at VOA Asia. Stay with us all this week as we build up to and report on the inauguration of our 46th President of the United States. You'll find more online between our programs on Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook, all at VOA Asia. We also thank our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.